Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, April 7th, and it is 1:30 p.m. This is Talk on the Rock, and I'm your host, Colette Zarnicki. Wrangell's Police Chief Gene Meek is here with us today to talk about what's going on in the community, including some fraudulent text messages. You can call in to ask a question or leave a comment. The number to KSDK is 874-2345. Hi, Chief Meek. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Good morning, or actually it's afternoon now. Good afternoon, everybody. It's been a computer-oriented kind of day. I've been banging away on the keys, so I actually lost track of time.
Yeah, that's a good thing, I think.
Oh, yeah. I prefer to get out of the office. I like to drive around more, but today was a office day, trying to play some catch-up.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming in. So a couple people that I know personally have recently got texts saying they owe the DMV parking ticket fees. And if they don't pay, then they're in trouble. And of course, the text has a link they can click to pay. Have you heard about these texts?
Yes. Unfortunately, going back about 7-8 months ago is when this hit the East Coast. I still have a phone number with the pretext from South Florida. So about 7 months ago, I received this saying that I owed the Florida DMV money, and it has slowly made its way across the United States, and welcome to Alaska. We are now catching up with the, hey, you owe DMV money when you don't. The thing about these text messages is they look official, but they're not. DMV's not going to reach out to you by text message if you owe them money.
Yeah, I actually got a text a few months ago, too, from Wisconsin, and it's like a invasive species.
It is, and they just keep going until they try to get everybody involved and see how much money they can separate from people.
Right. Will you give us more information on these types of texts?
Yes. Keep in mind, it can be not just DMV-oriented. This one happens to be through the DMV, and never respond to a text message, even if it may be realistic. If somebody's wanting money from you by text message, that's a big red flag as it is. There's another scam that became fairly prominent going back about a year and a half ago, closer to 2 years. It was in the Kenai area and in the Anchorage area, and people were also receiving text messages and emails. What was going on was the person who was committing the fraud was looking at court dockets. And they would look at the court dockets, and then they would reach out and contact those people saying, hey, you missed court. And if you don't pay $5,000 immediately, we're going to issue a warrant for your arrest. Now, they were playing off that they were the court system, but it was just someone paying attention to the court dockets, which made it seem very realistic.
Wow.
Once again, the court system's not going to reach out to you by email and text message to demand money from you by some type of electronic means. Here in Wrangell, we just started taking credit cards in DMV just a year ago. So the fact that we'd be trying to get money from you by text is not realistic.
Right. But yeah, at the same time, it plays off of that fear factor, especially with people who are in the court dockets, and you know.
Yes. Well, it was very, very legitimate fear-based tactic because they did not know, well, maybe I did miss a court date.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things that you'll see around Alaska, you know, you have the DMV scam, you have the court docket scam. I know one recently hit Juneau in, I believe, Petersburg, was police officers calling and saying you have a warrant and you need to pay X amount of money or they will come and arrest you on that warrant. This was also very prominent up in Anchorage, Kenai, going back a little over 2 years ago. I had a resident of Soldotna who at 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday called our dispatch center in just a panic. And she was begging that the chief, which would have been me, give her more time because it was Saturday and she couldn't get the cash.
And
luckily for us, our dispatchers were like, wait, what are you talking about? She was in Anchorage, and she went to every ATM that she could possibly go to, pulling cash out so that she could get the money to pay for this warrant that she was being told she had in the system. Luckily, they caught it. We since went out, took a report, started tracking where that fraud came from, but she was danger close to being separated from $30,000 to make this warrant go away.
Yeah, yeah. And that reminds me of similar frauds with elderly people, too.
Yes. The elderly are the most at risk. They're the most, they're the ones who do not have the best understanding of technology. Not that that saves a lot of people, but they are targeted more because of that that handicap. They don't understand that a lot of communications are done by text, where in modern society we've grown accustomed. You know, if I want to talk to you, I send you a text. If I want to talk to my son, I send him a text. It's become very text-based. It's become very email-based. There's a lot of this non-personal communication where you're not sitting in a room with someone. And that tends to play upon the elderly. And then they're also more prone to fear, having something taken away from them. So when people start doing these fraudulent activities, they will play upon that fear. That, and they don't want people to reach out to their bank. They don't want people to reach out to law enforcement because that, you know, that ruins the scam. They're trying to get the person very fearful, very spun up. You have to pay this now. You can't talk to anybody else. If you don't send it now, the cost will go up, or we'll issue out a warrant for your arrest. They start playing on this fear. So that's what makes the elderly so much more prone to it, because, I mean, nobody wants to go to jail, but even if you're 70 years old, you want to go even less. You know, it's not a very comfortable place to be at.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, 6 months ago, there was the threat of the kidnapping.
Oof, yes.
Here, and that is also fear-based, too.
That was very fear-based. You know, there's nothing more fearful than, hey, we have your child, and if you don't pay us $30,000, we're going to chop that child up and sell the body parts.
Ugh, yeah.
I mean, fortunately, that woman, when she had that emotional dump, she took off going in the right direction. She went straight to the school. Now we got involved and things calmed down. But once again, it's that intense fear. You have to pay us now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think about it. Don't. Once you start thinking, you automatically start doubting their intentions. And then the hoax, the fraud is gone. So they try to keep you spun up so you don't think about it. They make it urgent. Act now. Don't wait. Don't delay. If you delay, there's going to be penalties.
When somebody is caught up in the fear-based emotion, you know, it's hard to think otherwise. What are your suggestions?
If anyone is being pressured into paying money, you should stop and think about what exactly is going on. If somebody's trying to pressure you to pay money, that is a large red flag. You have to slow things down. You need to talk to someone else. You need to find out if it's legitimate. And whoever is trying to separate you from that money is not going to want you to do that. They're going to try to make you more in fear-based. If you owe money to DMV and somebody's on the phone with you, there's nothing wrong with, hey, let me call you back in just a moment. I'll call the general DMV hotline. That way you know you're talking to our Miss Jamie and not whoever's talking to you on the phone. If somebody texts you and they're trying to really get money out of you, why are they doing it by text? It's very impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
Contact your local bank. Find out if there are those scams. Our banking institutions are very well versed on this. If you have any doubts whatsoever, what is causing the exigent need? You have to pay the police department. Police department doesn't get paid from people who have warrants. Money goes to the court. So that we just need people to stop and think about that for just a moment. Where is this money supposed to go? If you had a question, well, if I owe the court money, don't talk to somebody on the phone. We're a small community. Go talk to Miss Katie up in the clerk's office. Go to the court clerk and ask there. If there's any type of exigency, it's not going to hold over for an hour or two. It takes you to slow everything down and think. And usually that's all it takes. It's just a few minutes to stop and think about, why is this person trying to get my money so badly?
Yeah. Yeah. And are you aware of any other scams? I know you mentioned the one that was happening in Anchorage last year, but anything else currently?
The ones that target our youth are kind of the more concerning ones. And we're going to start seeing a little bit of rise in that. Hopefully our youth are wise enough to catch this, but we've had a couple fall victim. And that is this anonymous text message that comes in. Hey, how are you doing? And it's a number you don't recognize. And you start engaging this person. Hey, you got the wrong number. I'm sorry. And you start communicating. Think if you're a young man or a young woman and you're engaging with someone and you're looking at going out into the world here soon, whether it's college, military, wherever this person is liable to go, and suddenly this other person is interested in you. There's a strong need to belong that's in all of us. And in the youth, it's very, very distinct. And if you get some friend suddenly on text message who's way away, usually that should start a red flag. In several cases, we've had people who fell into, hey, we crossed that line and now this is a friend of mine. And then all of a sudden, what we've seen is the sexting. The person will receive a picture, and it's nudity-based. And, hey, you know, this is me. How do you think I look? What do you think? Hey, could you send me one? And we've had people respond. And now all of a sudden, the fraud, the sexting fraud is brought to the front. If you're a young man and you're texting someone who might be a freshman or sophomore in college and they're really into you, all of a sudden you find out it's not this freshman or sophomore in college, it's some guy in the Philippines who has been researching you and is going to send this naked picture of you out into the world with your friends and your family if you don't pay them now. And that's one of those frauds that it really leaves a mark, because there's a lot of embarrassment to go with that. And there's a lot of, oh my God, what have I done? And then people start paying this money and it's never ending. Mm-hmm. If they get 300 from you now, they'll get 600 from you later. They're going to hold the photos. That these folks have to act. That way we can limit the damage. And it goes long lasting. I can't remember her name. Lieutenant Browning out of Homer PD has a story about a young lady who was involved with this sexting as she was in high school. And ultimately it led to her suicide because of embarrassment.
Wow.
These are the things that we want to avoid. This is how... I mean, yes, that's an extreme circumstance, but we want to cut that off and make those very, very non-existent, very unprecedented, so that it's the exception and not the rule that these people are being victimized.
Yeah, and I know there was a workshop planned. Did that happen?
We had one on sexting, but we need to do another one. It's been more than a year ago.
Okay.
We also had a workshop on fraud. That's been a little bit more than a year ago. It's probably something I really need to get our banking institutions on board with. First Bank, Wells Fargo, bring them in. Have an open house to the community so that they can educate themselves and the banks can advise them on what to do and some of the other fraudulent activities that they're seeing. If you look back just, 6 months ago, we had the lady in Petersburg who was paying thousands and thousands of dollars to someone who was in India. Fortunately, that person showed up in Petersburg to get the last $60,000 and they were taken into custody. But it's not as uncommon as everybody thinks. And you can see by the text messages that everybody's getting that our fraud is going up. And it's just that time of year. Tax season, you always see a large rise in fraud. When it gets to be about time for everybody to go to college, you start seeing a lot more fraud. When we get into Christmas, another fraudulent time because people want to donate money and they feel like giving, or you just end up in some situations where you may need money. And so fraud becomes very prevalent.
Yeah, speaking of taxes, that reminds me, I have been getting phone calls that I do not answer, but it's all about my taxes.
Yes.
And which are taken care of already, but
but that's the thing that they play on, is because they know that it's tax season. Mm-hmm. And if they can get 1 in 1,000 to suddenly give all their information, now you're talking about at $5,000-$10,000 that they can glean from that person, and it makes it profitable.
Yeah. Are there any other red flags that people should have in the front of their mind?
Well, we've been talking about the bad fraud. Let's talk about what would be perceived as good fraud.
Okay.
Hey, you just won the Facebook sweepstakes. There's no such thing.
Right.
Congratulations, you won the Facebook sweepstakes. If you send us $500 for a bonded courier, we'll send you $500,000 of your winnings. So you're sending $5,000 out into the world with the anticipation of getting $500,000 back. If it's too good to be true, generally it is too good to be true.
Yeah.
It's not true. I saw that a lot in South Florida with the more elderly community. Congratulations, you won the Nigerian lottery. And people are so intent on, oh, wow, you know, I won $30 million. They will pay money to see that money. And once that money's paid, it's gone. So you have to be careful of those, you won something. You have to think to yourself, did I play the Nigerian lottery? If you didn't play the Nigerian lottery, there's a very, very unlikely chance that you won it. If you didn't play in a sweepstakes, there's not much of a chance that you won that either. So be careful of if it's too good to be true. That's another fraudulent scheme of separating people from their money.
Yeah. I never thought of the good fraud.
Yes. I like how you put it in quotation marks. Good fraud.
Right.
But yes, be careful of things like that, because once again, fraud comes in all shapes and sizes. And the key things to watch for, and I keep coming back to this, is they will always try to get you to hurry. If you don't pay that $500 now, then we will send that sweepstakes money to someone else. They try to get people to act now without thinking, without spending that little bit of cognitive ability, because what they're trying to do is not get you to think about it and give that money. Mm-hmm. And then once you give the money, a lot of times they try to come back after more, because if they got it from you once, they'll try again.
Right. Wow. Thank you. Anything else you want to add about fraud and scams?
Oh, good gracious. Lady, we could probably talk about fraud and scams for a good 4 hours. I actually have PowerPoints on this stuff. But the main things are is just, I will harp on this over and over. If somebody's trying to get money from you, ask the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's something that's not readily present here, the IRS, Social Security, DMV, if it's people that are outside our normal circle and they're trying to get money from you, ask why, and if it's true, and then don't be afraid to call back. If you truly owe somebody money, they're not going to say, oh, no, don't give it to me now, or they're going to want their money.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you pay them now or pay them in a week, you're still giving them money if it's deserved. But someone who's trying to fraud you, they're not going to give you that opportunity. You have to pay them now.
Yeah, it's a good life lesson to just take a step back.
Yes.
And breathe.
Yes.
And that goes with that too, with fraud.
Phone a friend.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. So, also, okay, so moving on, the Ringgold Police Department has received or has hired a couple new staff members.
Yes.
How is that going?
Oh, it's wonderful. As far as I know, and we have a monthly Chiefs of the Southeast meeting where all the chiefs get together and we talk about our departments and the good, the bad, and things that we can improve. As far as I know, we're the only fully staffed agency in the Southeast right now.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing. When I say fully staffed, I'm talking about dispatch and patrol. So we're at our capacity limit with the most recent hire of Officer Sayon Williams, and he's our new youth relation officer, and he is currently in Salt Lake City receiving school resource officer training.
Oh, wow. Great. And when is he going to start at the school?
he will be in training. He's got this for this week is in SRO. And then when he gets back at the beginning of May, he will be going to the state, the Alaska State Academy. That's roughly 17 weeks long. That will carry him through the summer. He'll have some field training officer obligations, which I intend to keep him on day shift with the day shift unit, myself and the other officers that are working days, so that we can keep him more in the schools. Mm-hmm. And then he will probably be full-time solo by Christmas.
Okay. Yeah, and Officer Knorr just finished the academy, right?
Yes, he finished academy. He finished his field training officer responsibilities, and he is out on solo patrol now.
Okay, congratulations to both of them.
Yes, yes.
And what's funny is, maybe it's not so funny, but my next question was, what is the current state of staffing? So it's full.
We are full. We are full.
That's great.
With that last cops for hire grant that we pulled from the Bureau of Justice, they I think it's $270,000. I'd have to look at the numbers, but it's over a three-year period that supplements that position that Officer Williams is currently taking. So we are financing that position based on a lot of grant dollars, so that it's not affecting our community as far as that funding.
And how many officers are there to make a full staff?
We have six officers, and then there are five correctional officers / dispatchers.
Okay.
There's one part-time correctional dispatcher, and then we have one administrative assistant.
Awesome. Thank you. And then there's you.
Well, yes. Yes.
Okay. Great. And what are the top three public safety issues you're dealing with now here in Wrangell?
Right now, this very moment. Boy, I hate saying things out loud because you just doom yourself. Right now, with our drug arrests that occurred at the end of last year, we've seen a very substantial downturn on narcotics use and abuse. So with that being said, I do anticipate with the summer coming, the longer hours, a lot more visitors to our community, that will go back up. So we're paying attention to narcotics use and distribution. So that's always on our mind. Currently, driving is our biggest concern. We're coming out of that time where we've been in the dark and dingy for so long. More people are getting out driving around. There's less snow. People aren't quite paying attention to the roadway. They're enjoying the scenery. And it tends to cause speeding. It causes crashes. Over the last 3 months, we've paid a lot of attention to registrations and to people driving with insurance, because we've had a lot of crashes where people didn't have insurance. And that just compounds a lot of problems when those inevitable crashes occur. So we're putting a lot of focus in driving, traffic, and of course, when you start talking about driving and traffic, you go down the road of DUI. So we've had a couple extra shifts, extra officers working the nights on Friday and Saturday, just paying attention for drunk drivers.
Yeah, and it's getting nicer out.
It's getting nicer, and once again, we're going to get everybody out, and we've got Mayfest coming, and everybody's going to be out having a great time with the live music. I honestly can't wait for it. It's a big event for Wrangell, but hopefully those who go and attend the event will find another way home. We've got two taxi services here on the island now. Everybody's friends and family here find another way other than driving.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah, and okay, so talking about the staff, how does the staff balance, and how do you balance being a small town police force where everyone knows everyone with enforcing the law impartially?
You know, that's one of the things that we, when you're interviewing, I came from a very small town in Eastern Kentucky. We knew everybody. Everybody knew each other. It's hard to keep a secret in a small town community. Even with the rumor mill that runs wild, there's still some truths out there that everybody knows about. One of the things that we really focus on in interviews is that specific line item. Obviously, if you end up with a criminal act and it's a family member, you need to call another officer. We do third-party handoffs. You just make the scene safe. We want to lower that conflict of interest. So when you're dealing with your immediate family, we don't want you taking that case. Make it safe. Call for another unit. Let that officer who's not related take over.
Yeah.
When we start talking about investigations here in town, everybody knows everybody. I'm probably the one that people know the least about, which is a benefit because I expect our officers, and I'll circle back around to the hiring process, I expect our officers to conduct themselves in an impartial manner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the case you're working may be somebody you grew up knowing. It may be somebody that you're friends with. It may be someone that you have a strong association with. But there are certain standards by which you have to live your life. Being a police officer isn't a job, it's a career. It's a lifestyle. And by taking that oath of office, you have agreed to live that lifestyle. And you have to set aside those known, familiar associations and look at just the facts of the case. So when we have a case where someone may be friends or they may know the person, as the ultimate approving supervisor, I take a very deep look at the case. And I follow up with questions of, did you do a complete investigation? Did you miss? And if I have information of anything that they may have missed, they have to go back and research it. So far, I've had nothing but a great team who have done thorough investigations, and when they've needed to step aside, they have. So, and that's just having that. I'll brag on them that I've got a really good core group of officers and dispatchers who are doing the right things. What that makes that important is it's one of the standards that we hire by. Mm-hmm. When you sit in and you're doing an interview with me, there's usually a board. It's me. I'll bring in the sergeant of patrol. I'll bring in someone else. There may even be a fourth person that's not even related to the police department. And these are some of the questions that we ask during your interview process. You know, what happens when you have this conflict of interest? What would you do? And this is before they even get an idea on how we would do it procedural-wise or policy-wise within the department. They're asked these questions so they have to think about it. Officer Williams, that young man is beloved by almost everybody I talk to because he worked at the bank. Everybody knows him. He's related to a bunch of people. He was asked these questions. What happens when it's someone that you know personally? How do you handle that? And there's certain answers that we look for, and there's certain answers that if they're given will get you dropped out of the running as an officer here. Will there be mistakes? Yes. But a mistake is that act where you're acting in good faith, that your actions are legal, ethical, and moral.
Mm-hmm.
You're acting in good faith. Mistake will happen, but it's unintentional. You are acting in the best interest that your actions are legal, ethical, and moral. And then inevitably you will have situations where ethics and morals will collide with legality. And in situations like that, my expectation is that they make the best decision possible. And then if it was a mistake, we'll train, we'll fix it so it doesn't reoccur again.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just wondering if this is like, you know, if training is involved throughout the whole career on this sort of topic.
Well, yes, it always falls into ethics-based training and doing the right thing. Even when we all make mistakes. Bad decisions, well, we all tend to make those also, but the officers need to make the best decisions possible. Any bad decisions they have to answer for, it's a lifestyle. So, and I keep bringing it back around to that because when we train, when we do almost any training that's associated with law enforcement, there is an ethical foundation to it. Today, we're going to be going over with the entire team, taser training. There's a lot of ethics involved in the deployment of a taser, not just in the bounds of use of force, but making that decision because there's significant force, there's a significant pain involved in a taser, so they need to be deploying it in a manner that's ethical. And that's why we also require all of our officers to go and be exposed to the taser because this is what it feels like. This is what you're exposing someone to. so that they can make sound judgment on how that tool is to be used.
Wow, I am curious. We have just a couple more questions left here. But how many trainings do you hold for the whole team throughout the year about?
Before I got here, I think training had fallen behind to a certain degree. There was certain focuses on defensive tactics and things that were needed. However, Sergeant Rohr has got us on the right track. He's got our training schedule set up so that we train once a week as a team, which is everybody involved, for a two-hour period.
Wow.
Now, we do other trainings outside of that, but that's a two-hour block each week that we do specific training on. Today is Taser.
Yeah.
Last week it was DUI and how to properly do a DUI because we'd found a few mistakes in our DUIs. So here's how we're going to fix the mistakes. And we train to do it in the most professional way possible. He's got a schedule set up for what the trainings are throughout the next month. I think 3 weeks ago it was firearms training. So we're on that schedule where, once again, you go back to professionalism. There's a direct link between training and professionalism. The more you train, the more professional your department is.
Yeah.
And we're catching up to speed. We don't want to meet Alaska standards. We want to exceed them. And not just exceed them by a little bit. I want to exceed them greatly so that we limit mistakes and we have that more professional department.
Thank you. And we are out of time, but is there anything else you would like to add from anything fraudulent to training to beyond?
We are still getting deeply involved with our schools. We're planning out a bike rodeo again this year. We had one last year. This year, I'm wanting to incorporate that dreaded micro-mobility device, a.k.a. electric scooter, so that we get all of our youth trained up on how to properly operate those things, and we end up with a lot less indigestion this year because we have some new laws in effect. We want to cut down the need for that enforcement.
When do you have an idea of when that will be?
I just had the school principal send me over some dates. They're sitting in my inbox. I'm going to look them over and see which date is the most appropriate for us because I don't like it just running it myself. I would like to have Officer Williams there if possible, if not one or two other officers, so that we have that good positive youth interaction.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in. It was
a pleasure. I love being here.
Yes, yes. We're so happy that you're here. That was Ringel, Police Chief Meek, and we're going to hop on into World Cafe.